intro-ing the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back, everybody.
What's up, everybody?
It's February, so it's long past the Golden Globes and the Emmys by the time this comes out. However, it's really more of a coincidence than it is a condition of me talking about this. But I wanted to talk a little bit about The Crown.
Having reviewed the data, the pollsters have now presented their findings.
Asked if the royal family were out of touch with ordinary people,
53% said yes.
Asked if they were wasteful of public money,
they lacked compassion,
62%
said yes. 69%
said yes.
The Prime Minister has a new nickname, King Tony.
We must change not just the politics of this country, but the soul of this country.
Boys need you now more than ever.
I'm afraid we don't do fathers and sons very well in this family.
Perhaps you don't like to be reminded how we got to this point.
The Crown doesn't ask existential questions of itself.
Perhaps it should.
Won't stop till it's over.
Perhaps now is the time.
This is what we expect to be the longest serving monarch in history. People will want to celebrate your reign and mark the end of an era.
But what about the life I put aside? The woman I put aside when I became queen? I will always be by your side.
When fate summons, even monarchs must obey.
We're ready, ma'am.
Because I just finished it, and that is a show that has won awards over the years. I think Elizabeth Debicki just won for best lead actress. So I want to talk about The Crown a little bit. The Crown has 6 seasons. Like I said, it just wrapped up in like December. So it's been a bit, but created by Peter Morgan. It's a Netflix original. I think it originally premiered, when was that? 2016. And so Tara and I have been watching the show since it came out. I think she was drawn to it for the, you know, the historical production. Anytime you got really great filmmaking with good production design, that's her thing. Yep. And I'm really on board for the filmmaking and the writing and the performances. And so all of these elements come together to make a really great show that kind of is centered around Queen Elizabeth II, the late Queen Elizabeth II now. And kind of taking us through her, where she becomes queen at a really young age, and all the way through, I'll say, the 2000s. I'm not going to dig into this too much, but, you know, just in general, I think The Crown is one of the best things that Netflix has ever done. When it comes to their original programming, I'm not going to say it's like as good of a show as Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. But it is a very well-made show that would beg a rewatch just so that you can experience it all again.
Sure.
One thing that people may not be aware that this show does is every 2 seasons, the cast turns over. Mm-hmm. So you've got 2 seasons where Claire Foy is Elizabeth, and then in seasons 3 and 4, it's Olivia Colman. And then these last 2 seasons, it's Imelda Staunton. And you've got a great set of actors in here, Matt Smith, Vanessa Kirby. And then you turn John Lithgow. John Lithgow is in, he's with both queens, both Claire Foy and Olivia Colman, because he plays Winston Churchill. And so in Olivia Colman's part, he's like kind of on the way, he's dying. So they're just come back. We're not going to recast Winston Churchill. And so I was like, oh, that's so cool. Cause John Lithgow was so good in these first 2 seasons, as he's just great in general. He's just one of those actors. And then you go into 3 and 4 and you got Olivia Colman once again, Helena Bonham Carter. Emma Corrin came in and won some awards for her portrayal of a very young Diana Spencer. And Gillian Anderson, I think, won an award for her portrayal of Margaret Thatcher. It was very good. And then this last season, Imelda Staunton is the queen. Jonathan Pryce, it comes in as Prince Philip. He's really, really great. He's so good. Not only is he just a great actor, but like he's very well cast as Philip. He's tall, got that weird grimace he can put on. It's great. Dominic West, Elizabeth Debicki, really, a lot of great actors. Nice. For sure. If you have Netflix and you've never checked out The Crown ever, I like it. I think the popular consensus, though, is that these last couple seasons were not as strong as the rest of the show kind of is. That maybe the show overstayed its welcome a bit. I don't know if I felt that, but we both felt that when it ended, that it sort of felt kind of immediate. I'll go ahead and say that the series ends with the, because this is all based on true events. I'm not spoiling any major character plot stuff, but
yeah,
it ends with the marriage of Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles, which was in 2005.
Yeah.
Of course, the queen lives another 18 years beyond that. But so when the thing it deals a lot with her planning her funeral and then wrapping up this storyline with her relationship with Charles, my wife is kind of like, it's just a whole bunch that happens after that, though. Like there's the wedding of Kate Middleton. And then of course there's Harry and Meghan, and you know, there's all this, there's COVID, there's all these things. And then there's her actual death and everything.
Yeah.
And we were kind of talking about how, why would it, I don't know. Like, it just feels sort of like in one episode, we're just going to kind of, it didn't feel like the season was bringing anything to a close. It just sort of felt like that episode was. And I ultimately landed on, I don't know, when you think about it, the show, Charles was always a part of the show. He was a very small child in the first season. And now he's like in his 60s or whatever, in this final season. And part of what when you really think about it, like you think about it less like a biography of Elizabeth and more like her relationship with her family members. As the years go on and as she loses them and whatnot. So, that's the thing. That's the limitations of fiction and fictional accounts of, ongoing people is, you're always going to miss something. I got my dad that Elon Musk book for Christmas. I already know that like there are so many things that aren't in that book that was published within the year that have happened since that would have been included if this book were written 10 years from now.
Right.
And it's just, where do you stop? You know? It's tough. So in that way, The Crown is never going to measure up to some people's expectations of what should be in it. There's stuff in it that didn't even happen. There's that angle too. And some people have even been saying, like, I think because it's such a well-made show and there's such an attention to detail in the filmmaking, people automatically assume everything happened. And some of it is just made up. And so, as always, I think they finally had to make Netflix put like a tab on it that's like based on fictional, you know, or based on true events or whatever, because it's like you're screwing up the popular consciousness understanding of the royal family. Of
what happened.
Of like these real people. And it's just, woof. Anyways, I think the show
is that time they revealed that Charles' dad was a cow from Neptune. That probably didn't happen.
There's a lot to like about the show, and the things that it's criticized for, I think, are minor when it comes to enjoying it. And if you just think of it as like any fictional account of a real thing, treat it like it's in a Faraday cage. It is a closed, is a one-off, closed loop story about a family of, you know, think of it like fictional monarch, fictional England, whatever. Yeah. And then after it's all over and you go, I can't believe the thing, go read about it. And go read, you know, if you want to read about the wedding of Charles and Camilla, go read about it. Go read an actual biographer who wrote about it. There's like a couple books out on the Queen. There's one that got written right before her death. I think it was published remarkably well timed with her actual funeral. Anyway, there's biographies. Elizabeth is a really interesting and admirable figure when it came to her own self-discipline. And, you know, the series kind of paints her as a little bit obsessed with her popularity towards her elder years, which I'm not sure was a thing, but that's drama. Charles is a little too like wanting of the throne in ways that I feel like is a little bit kind of gross, considering that the degree to which it's portrayed is probably made up. Sure. You know, so I can see if you're a royal, you're watching this and you're like, Jesus Christ, come on. Like, that's not what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're predisposed to think that this is, you know, royalty is as cutthroat and as, self-interested as you want it to be, the show is going to play right into your hands.
Yeah.
But like I said, like with any discerning viewer should know that, like, It's a great show, and you should not take a fictional TV show's version of history, no matter how well made it is, as fact and as historical record, because it's not.
Yeah, sure.
So there's that. Anyway.
Yeah.
I do recommend The Crown. So
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who love it.
Yeah. It's worth it, I think.
Cool.
Oh. I wanted to chit chat with you about something.
Okay.
I saw on Letterboxd that you saw the Taylor Swift movie.
I did. Yes.
Okay. I did too.
Okay. Recently or?
Yeah. Like a few weeks ago, a month ago.
Welcome to the Eras Tour.
This has been the most extraordinary experience of my entire life.
To go on a little adventure together, and that adventure is going to span 17 years of music. How does that sound? Welcome to the acoustic set. It's a cool summer. Are you ready for it? I'll drop the people back in the car.
People would come up to me and they'd be like, you're gonna just like do a show with like all the albums in it? And I was like, yeah, it's gonna be called the Eras Tour. See you there.
So we did a screening of it at work, and so I was able to see it there. It's not something that was on my radar, and had we not done that, I likely would never have seen it. Mm-hmm. But I saw it. What did you think about it?
I enjoyed it. For what it is. What it is is a concert.
Yeah. Yep.
There's no story. There's no narrative. You know, unlike documentaries like Miss Americana or even the Long Pond, the thing I talked about this, I think I talked about this one, the one Disney Plus did, the Long Pond studio sessions for Folklore. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a performance of the whole album, but there are at least chit chats in between each song providing context. It's more of a documentary than the Eras Tour is. So Miss Americana is a documentary featuring some songs because it's part of a tour.
Yeah.
But there's a story and there's stuff going on. And then you get to this, which is we filmed the concert. Like, it's a concert movie, period.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I liked it a lot. I thought it was worth the money because we paid for it through we rented it through Amazon because we were supposed to see this when it was in theaters. We had tickets. And we were going to go, and we were 30 minutes from leaving. My parents were already on their way to watch the kids for us. And then my daughter was trying to clean the kitchen and she sprayed my son in the face with like bleach or whatever, like, you know, cleaner.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yep. So yep. I remember this.
So we had to go to the ER instead.
Yep.
So my parents showed up like, hey, have fun at the movie. We're like, we're going to the hospital. Bye. Anyway, so we had already paid. And so we just, there was like $60 down the drain that night. So when it became available to rent at home, I was like, we should check it out. So we made a night of it and I enjoyed it because I like Taylor Swift. I like her music and I enjoyed the show that was put on. I thought it was fun. And I feel even better for people who got to watch it in a theater, with better sound. And I feel even better for people who got to watch it in person
live.
And who actually would be at one of these concerts. So I thought it was cool.
I gave it a star rating on Letterboxd cause I just always do, but I'll refrain from a star rating here because I feel like you can't really quantify this as a film, in the traditional sense, like we're, like you said, there's no narrative. There's nothing added to the concert experience that makes this unique to a film. And so for that reason, it's just a multi-camera switch of a live production. And that's really all it is. So you can't really quantify this in terms of the good story or good performances. I mean, there's nothing, you know, or even documentary ways, like, there's a burning question and there's like things that are unique to cinema. Right. But with this, it's literally just the show. I'll say this, like, so I'm as familiar with Taylor Swift music as whatever played in this film is what I know. I don't know anything else. I've never searched Taylor Swift. I've never listened to a Taylor Swift song. To this day, currently, right now, even after seeing this, I don't think I could name a single song. I don't know anything about Taylor Swift.
Sure.
The production was fantastic. That alone, like, watch it on mute. You know, it's fantastic. It's the actual design of the sets, design of the like choreography. And then obviously the technology is fantastic. The LED wristbands that everybody was wearing they're able to send radio frequency signals to each of these individual wristbands based on the seating location, the seating assignment, and project images in the crowd. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I think really pushes forward live stage shows. I think for those reasons, it's totally worth a watch. I still don't care for Taylor Swift's music. So that's a hindrance. I'm not a music, I have no degree in music. I don't know anything about music. I know what is my cup of tea and what isn't. This isn't. And I'm not going to get into, you know, what I like or don't like about the musicianship or the compositions or whatever, other than to say, the music tends to be more, teeny bopper than I care for. It seems to be, written to a crowd that I'm not a part of. And so for those reasons, I have a hard time. Like I respect it. I see what she's doing. It's not for me. I can't get behind it. Too many breakup songs, too many songs about things that don't apply to me, and too many things that are like empowerment songs, which are fine on their own, but seems to be an easy way to pander or get people on your side. Again, not saying that's what she's doing, but that's something that, you know, other artists have done. And so it tends to stick in my craw a little bit. The production's fantastic. I think she's very talented, but I can't get behind the music. So I can't really recommend it beyond just to say, like, if you're really into the idea of live production I think you'll get a lot out of this. There's a lot of really good ideas, a lot of inspiration you can pull from it. Whether that's, you know, just the choreography or the nature of, you know, combining what is essentially like, in a weird way, music video with a live show. It's interesting because you'll have a song, like, I can't name it, but there's a song where there's a bunch of people that are like in boxes, and there's like a song where everybody's at like desks and typing, and it's like, okay, so these are, this is essentially like a music video, but it's performed live and it has a story. I don't know what it is, but it's there. But I think that's because I'm more paying attention to the technological aspect of it than the music. So the lyrics are totally lost on me. But all that aside, like I think that she's popular for a reason. She's made a great career for a reason. And like I said, she's talented, not my cup of tea, but you know, I'm interested to see if she ever breaks free from the mold, which it does seem like she's, crossing genres and doing new things and pushing herself, which is great. And if she ever pushes into a direction that I'm interested in, then I'll be first in line to, you know, give it a shot. But as it stands, I'm not really interested in the direction that she has gone in, and you know, the paths that she's trod, I don't care much for. So I'll bow out. But yeah, I mean, in terms of staging, like it's all fantastic. Yeah, it, like if you're even adjacent to live production, which I am, you'll get a lot of inspiration from it. And I think that that's really cool.
I don't know what else this woman has to do to for your approval, Dustin.
she doesn't have to do anything for my approval. She's a billionaire. She doesn't have to do a thing for me.
She's a billionaire. Well, how big of a check will it take for you to give Taylor Swift a thumbs up?
She has a thumbs up in some areas, but not all areas. And that's all anybody has.
So I wrote an entire newsletter sometime last year, wholesale endorsing Taylor Swift. As someone who is her age and outside of her demographic of music. And so I was culturally aware of Taylor Swift for a long time, just being a human being. But I was never like, and someone who was exposed to radio and places where music was played. So I was aware of Taylor Swift without, you know, and then, whatever, at some point, maybe around when 1989 came out, when she started dipping out of country and getting more into pop, and it was rubbing people the wrong way. And so then I was like, kind of like we do, Dustin, I was like, oh, this is pissing people off. I wonder what that's about. And so then I started paying attention. And I was into it. And then especially, I think when I saw Miss Americana, the documentary, and I sort of realized not only what this person goes through as a famous person and as someone who's producing on her level, but just as a young woman, you know, in subject to the biases and preconceived notions of what people think that she is and what too many people think she ought to be or ought to represent, and ought to sort of stay in, I think a lot of child stars go through this too. And certainly a lot of other musicians who start out as teens is people sort of go like, oh, but you're for like, at some point you release music that where people go, oh, well, I thought you used to be someone my kids could listen to. Now they can't. Right. And it's like, okay, well, I'm an adult now. You know, I've got other problems. I've got new things going on. Right. And so there's a pressure that she's under and like a lot of artists where at a certain point, your audience or part of the audience doesn't want you to grow because they want you to stay the same for their consumption, which is gross.
It's tale as old as time. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It happens to every artist who didn't start out as like a self-actualized adult, you know,
when the Beatles went more psychedelic and when the Beatles went abstract, it was an issue. When Bob Dylan went electric, it was an issue.
Yeah.
You know, like this is all, it all happens.
For me, when Bob Dylan went, that was an issue just in general.
What? Bob Dylan's the best songwriter that's ever existed.
He wrote his first song, and I was like, I'm good.
Dude, listen to Positively 4th Street and tell me that's not amazing.
I can't tell you if I have or not, because I can't understand what the hell the man is saying. I saw Bob Dylan in concert. He came to Orange Beach. And I remember the paper the next day described the crowd as a mass exodus.
Well, nowadays, Bob Dylan, it sounds like this.
He was just a motorcycle that couldn't start. This was like 2009, I think it was.
I think it was around that same time. I think it might've been that same time. I think it was in Mobile, if I'm not mistaken, that Bob Dylan was picked up as a homeless person. Do you remember this? He was wandering the streets and he was picked up as a homeless person. And he was like, I'm Bob Dylan, man. And they were like, oh, sorry, Mr. Dylan. We thought you were homeless. We didn't realize you were a millionaire.
We have to charge you for vagrancy. Sorry.
And he's like, this is going to make a great song.
I'm stuck inside a Mobile with the Memphis Blues.
Blues again.
Again. No, he was singing like a Rolling Stone. I was like, oh, hell yeah, here we go. And he sang it all weird. Like he didn't sing like he does. Yeah. He was like, how does it feel? Be on your own.
Yes. Yep.
Without home. I was like, please sing.
This is two schools of thought for live performance. There's the folks like Bob Dylan who, I guess at a certain point, and I think it happened early for him, where he's like, I'm just going to give you something different and get over it because it amuses me. And then there's people like Taylor Swift who's like, I'm going to elevate what I've done on a track and it's going to sound very similar, but it's going to be elevated by energy.
Yeah.
And you're going to get what you paid for.
Yep.
And Bob Dylan's like, I don't care what you paid
for,
man. You paid to see me. I'm going to have fun up here.
It's my money now. I do as I wants to do. I'm not going to buy new clothes. I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
In fact, I'm going to wipe my ass with this money.
You can't make me.
Yeah. What do you want me to do? You want me to eat this dollar? Okay. I'll do the opposite.
I'm going to throw up a dollar.
I'm going to put it in my butt. Anyway, so Taylor Swift. So I like Taylor Swift. I'm full blown on that train. And I really do think it's just because for me it's multifold. It's I happen to like a lot of the songs. And I'm impressed creatively with what she accomplishes, similar to why I have a special spot for writer directors versus just directors. Cause I go, okay, here's someone who like really owns the voice of what they're trying to produce. And she's one of those people who, you know, has co-written. I believe she has a co-writing credit on every single one of her songs. I don't think that she's ever done a song that was just written by someone else, unless it was a cover. She is, I said this in the newsletter too, but she has directed or co-directed at least every one of her music videos in the past like 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So she's really interested in that. She made a short film out of one of the songs. And she's developing a narrative feature based on a screenplay she wrote with Focus or somebody.
Yeah.
And has like a development deal. And it's like, oh shit.
Yep.
That's an artist. That's someone who it kind of like a lot of great athletes like are multi like, I play baseball. Sure. I play football. I do whatever, you know, I like them all.
Right.
Hell, there's a book. I keep talking about books. There's a book I read called Range by a guy named David Epstein. It was all about generalists and how that makes you, you know, a more well-rounded person, but it makes you better in your specialized field because your general experience makes you immune to bias within tunnel vision. The fact that she has so much range as an artist beyond just, I play the guitar and sing. It's like, I write, I play the piano, I do this, I do that. I direct, I write, like narrative, like I write screenplays, like I'm interested in camera. Like that's an interesting person to me. And as a fellow like millennial, I'm just like, hell yeah. You know, like, I like seeing someone like her so successful because she seems not only to me, at least to really earn it, but she's one of those people, and it's part of her image too, but like, she's one of those people to me who is very much like a girl next door type. And seems to at least be, for, you know, whichever way people feel about that, she is altruistic and seems to be very, I mean, I should probably say, other than like the private jets, seems to be pretty, pretty conscious of how she uses her wealth and her influence. So that, I like that. I can't say the same for, I haven't looked into it, but I can't say the same for like Ariana Grande, you know, like,
right.
I don't know anything about that woman, except she licked a donut once and everyone made her apologize for it.
I didn't even know that. I can't name an Ariana, whatever her name is, song. Ariana Grande.
She was in public. She was somewhere with her, I guess, one of her boyfriend, or I think she's been married like 3 times. She looks like she's 15, but she's like 23. Anyway. Okay. But she like, they were just in some donut shop or something. She like licked it or put her finger on it or something. And people were like, what the fuck? And she was like, I'm so sorry. It was just.
Okay. It's like,
Young rich people thinking they can do stuff, you know?
Sure. All right. Like, whatever.
Yeah. It's funny, but like, not really, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I don't know, man. Like, look, props to Taylor Swift for becoming as successful as she is and for continually pushing. Like, I can tell there's more work that went into her more recent songs than, and not to say that there was never work for the older songs, but like, she's more conscious of what she's doing. You can tell it.
And she's got more control now too.
And the songs are more like earwormy, like they're deliberately constructed, I believe, to be as catchy and as memorable as they possibly can be. So for that reason, like, she's totally playing the game. Like, she knows exactly what she's doing. None of this is by accident. It's just not my cup of tea, and that's fine. You know, like, she can write about what she wants to write about, and she's clearly not lacking for fans. She's selling out stadiums, and she's not lacking influence. She's not lacking in people who are willing to pay top dollar for her to perform. And this is the crazy thing. Like, people always talk about, well, she's a billionaire. That's crazy. She just writes music. Like, why should she make that much money? And I'm like, because if you sit in the middle of an arena like she did for this tour, and all of those people are there to only see you, and the way that her show is constructed, it is her.
Yeah.
Right? We're not talking about, like, you know, Paul McCartney on tour where he's got a backing band and all of that. Like, obviously people are there for him, but the backing band is visible the whole time. Like, he is there, but he's got support in that your eye could go to someone else if it wanted to.
Right.
With her, like, there, your eye is on her the entire time.
Yeah.
And so that means that it's her face that's selling those seats. And if those seats sell for hundreds of dollars a piece, and she's doing this all over the country, all over the world, yeah, so she deserves to be a billionaire, because she's putting in a lot. That's a lot of work. Like, the amount of rehearsal that show was, people don't think about this, but like, I know that when you rehearse a show, even a show that lasts for 30 minutes, you can rehearse it for days. But if you do a show that's 3 hours long and that involved, that's a multi-month, maybe a multi-year rehearsal process.
Yeah.
She deserves every penny that comes to her. But the music's just not my cup of tea.
And that is that is Dustin being objective. Like, Dustin, sure. Dustin has no bias towards Taylor Swift.
I have no bias toward her. I have no bias against her. Like, it's just like, I don't know anything about this person. And somebody mentioned at the screening, like, she was dating some football player. And I was like, okay, news to me. And they were like, this made national news. And I'm like, okay, I missed it. I don't know what to tell you.
It did. And the thing is, like, the I hated all the coverage of her dating Travis Kelce, because one, it got everyone like, it got everyone chasing the wrong conclusion, which is like, oh, it's self-promotion. It's like, it's just two people who are into each other. Like,
yeah,
like, and you know, oh, it's, of course it's a famous guy. And it's like, you know, when you're Taylor Swift, can anyone else identify with the kind of pressure and world that your life is that other
and
than,
let's be honest, it's a really good way to make sure that he's not just after your money. He's got his own money.
He's got his own money. And people were like, oh, you know, the fact is Taylor Swift was directly credited for like saving the economy last year, for how much money the Eras Tour made. Like it was a literal factor in like tourism and like supply chain figures. And you know, it got people spending money and keeping certain things afloat and providing jobs. And, you know, with the whole NFL thing, people are like, oh, it was this constant thing for like weeks. It was like, I don't want to hear about Taylor Swift, like while I'm watching football. And it's like, hey guy, like the NFL would love nothing more than for people to keep talking about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, cause it's getting people watching games. They experienced a surge in viewership because now Swifties who don't watch football are like, oh, I'll watch the Chiefs game. Like just Taylor's sure. there. And it's like, and the NFL's like Roger Goodell's like, talk about her all you want, you know? Like,
right.
It's cool. And it's just, it sucks because like, I do see people chasing, there's even the misconception that like, you know, people are like, oh, she's just dating him so she can have another breakup song to write. And it's like, God, man, like there was only like maybe 12 breakup songs in her whole set list. Like most of her music is not breakup music. And so it's just like, there's it's like I was saying earlier, like there's just a projection of what she, I feel like there's a projection of what she is. And it's like a caricature, much like we do to lots of famous people. We have an idea of who they are. And we just sort of stick with that. And when things happen that play into that narrative, we just go see, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Taylor Swift reached a point where she was like, okay, I can't really control like how people react to me. And so, I don't know.
I'll tell you my preconceived notion of Taylor Swift going into this was I knew at some point she was country. And then a year or two ago, I became aware that she was no longer country.
Oh, geez.
And that was all that I knew.
She diverted from country I think it was 1989 and that was in 2014.
Oh, I thought you were saying she diverted from country in 1989.
No.
She was 6 months old.
When she was born. Yeah. She was born at the tail end of 1989. She's younger than we are. The prep for this was insane too. I heard about this on the radio, but like, so the concert ensemble included 15 backup dancers choreographed by a woman named Mandy Moore, not that Mandy Moore, but a really famous choreographer.
Okay.
And a live band of 6 instrumentalists and 4 female backing vocalists. Moore was recommended by Swift's friend, American actress Emma Stone, who had worked with Moore on the musical film La La Land. Mm. To prepare for the tour physically, Swift sang the entire set list daily while running on a treadmill, trained in dance for 3 months leading up to the first show, and forewent the consumption of alcohol. And then of course, like after every show, she doesn't talk to people. Like, you know, it's like, you know, she doesn't go out and do stuff. It's just, all right, give me food and I'm going to go on vocal rest and I'm going to go to sleep. Because I have to do this for weeks. And, and that is hard. It's not just, it's like you said, it's not just writing songs and showing up. It's, you know, creating something that is creatively cohesive and tells a story. It evolves as you do. And then it's all this production and dancing and moving. And as anyone with a brain knows, moving changes the way your voice happens.
Yes.
I mean,
there's a section in this where she's like laying down on top of a barn or something.
Yeah. Roof.
And I'm like the ability to sing while laying down flat on your back is a feat in and of itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my brain just kept going to like the tech choreography that's happening behind the scenes that no one knows about.
Yeah.
The camera switch, you know, all of the intricacies of the lighting and also all of the LED elements that are on the stage and the walls and all of that. Like, not only did that take forever to set up, but it also, it takes a lot of people to run it. And, you know, all the quick change people in the back, everybody that's helping with this, that'll never get the applause. It's like, that's where my brain kept going, was like, there is a lot of people working behind the scenes on this. And that's impressive.
The big curved LEDs, like, you know, it's not just look as good on camera as you could expect a monitor to look. And with, I'm looking at a picture of it now, just the detail. It's incredible. It's really amazing stuff. And, you know, hats off to her. I mean, there's a reason why she saw it prudent to give those bonuses. She gave like these gigantic bonuses to the entire like trucking crew or whatever. Like, I can't remember. It was like $100,000 or something. It was crazy. It was like they each got like $100,000 bonus. And it was, cause like they're packing up and shipping that stuff everywhere and breaking it down and putting it together. And it's just like, can you imagine just like your 33rd time putting up a monitor? You're just like, I hate this. I'm over it.
You hate it, but it's also like, you think it becomes easier. It doesn't.
No.
Like, the thing about technology is you can set it up and it works perfectly by the time you're done, you know, setting it up. But then you take it down and you set it up in the next city, and it's like reinventing the wheel, because you'll have a whole new set of issues, and the things that you think you learned the last time don't apply anymore for whatever reason, because technology is just technology. It's the same way that, like, you know, if you unplug and replug your computer into your TV too many times, like, eventually your TV's like, I don't know what to do anymore. And you're like, but you worked yesterday. It's the exact same thing, but on the scale of, hey, the show is tonight and this better work by tonight.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh crap. Yeah. There's millions of dollars on the line tonight. It's big time, man.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no time to fuck around.
Right.
Yeah. No. I think you were talking about singing earlier. Like, I remember Pink too, the singer Pink, like, Pink learned to sing upside down.
Oh, really?
Like, she would practice it, and then she was like showing someone. So like, she got one of those like ab machines or whatever that locks your ankles or whatever. And she just hung up there upside down and sang and sounded perfect. Yeah. And it's like, you would think like, that's so weird, because like, gravity does weird stuff to like your throat, your soft palate and your lungs. And she trained because she's on, because Pink, like, whatever, however long ago, got all up into all into those like cables that she likes to zip around on.
Yep.
And now it's just part of her show. And so I think part of that was she had to learn how to like sing while she's like flipping and stuff. It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah, because
you think about it. You could totally just do a pre-recorded vocal track for that section of your show.
Yeah.
But hats off to anybody who doesn't go that route.
Yeah. And Pink doesn't, Taylor Swift doesn't. I'm always,
Bob Dylan doesn't.
No, he sure doesn't, does he?
He sure doesn't. If there's one thing we know for sure, is that Bob Dylan does not pre-record his vocals.
He doesn't know how the machine works. It's too,
I don't know. This is running through there. I don't know.
Does it run on electricity? Because that's not what I'm about.
In my brain, there's like a hamster running the wheel back there.
Right. Is that how it works? No, sir, it's not.
No, Mr. Dylan, it isn't. All right, well, I'm going to go smoke. I'll be back in a...
All right, well, okay, cool. You got a cigarette? Maybe you got a cigarette. Do you?
Mr. Dylan, this is your fifth cigarette in the last 5 minutes.
Mr. Dylan, you're smoking right now. Oh, I forgot. Sorry.
Oh, I'll just add it to it. Yeah. He's got five.
He splits them like Robin Hood in his arrows. He just shoves a cigarette down another cigarette.
He has a cigarette on each pipe of the harmonica. It's every time. Every time he inhales.
No wonder he sounds like nicotine. Does. Yeah. How's your voice, Mr. Dylan? All right, I think you should quit smoking, sir.
Flash forward 5 years from now, and his voice just sounds like this. Hey, it's a really pretty day out, isn't it? Isn't it, Bob? Yes. Translator next to him. Mr. Dylan says, yes, it's a fantastic day today.
He sounds like he's vomiting into a hat.
Hey, the Eras tour gave me a really good idea for when you and I take the podcast live.
Oh, cool. But we're going to do LEDs.
Yeah, we're going to do LEDs and we're going to call it the Errors Tour. E-R-R-O-R-S.
Errors.
I'm sure that joke's been made before, but I wanted to make
it. You know what? I actually, not to mention it, there was a video on YouTube I saw because someone was like maliciously cutting together every time someone made a mistake on this tour. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not from the movie, but just like aggregate, like,
oh, wow.
Hey, guys, send me all the fuck ups. I'll put them together.
Tour.
Call it the Errors Tour. It's going to be so cool. Take her down. Take down Taylor Swift.
I saw a video the other day that was like, I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was like a compilation of every time that Taylor Swift rhymes the word bar with car or something. And it happened surprisingly a lot.
It does happen a lot.
And,
yeah, you're right.
And I was like, and I watched like two of them and I was like, I get the gist. Yeah. I don't need to watch the other 4 minutes of this video. Yeah, it's fine.
After a while, I just go, I don't want to be made aware of this because I don't want this ruined for me.
I also don't want to
give clicks to such pettiness.
Yes. On one hand, you're like, how dare she? She's just writing lazy songs. And on the other hand, you're going, she's a human and every human has words they go to. And like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Party, you're right. Party was like, how could this isn't acceptable for the amount of money she makes. And then you go, I make $50,000 a year.
And I say the word like way too much. You know what I mean?
I can barely afford my car.
Well, you're like, okay, well, who are some of your favorite artists? Oh, I love Steven Spielberg. Okay, well, he makes a lot of movies about kids, doesn't he? Yeah, I guess so.
Kind of weird, right?
Kind of weird, isn't it?
No, not really. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No comment.
Well, she can talk a lot about cars and bars. What's the difference?
Yeah.
Or if you're Elizabeth Banks, Steven Spielberg has never made a movie about a woman. The color purple. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, right.
Is that one?
Have you seen that clip?
I have seen that clip. It's so cringe, man.
It's so cringy. She's trying to make a big point.
Yeah, she's trying to trying to out Steven Spielberg.
Yep. Yeah. He's never made a movie with a female lead, and it's just the lone person in the back. The color purple.
What if that was Spielberg?
It was Steven.
He just spits out his champagne like, fuck this. The color purple.
It was George Lucas. Oh, the color purple. He wrote that one.
Don't worry, Steven. I won't let her talk about you like that.
Nobody talks about my friends.
Yeah, I'm not going to let Elizabeth Banks talk shit about you. I'd let other people, maybe, but not Elizabeth Banks.
Not Elizabeth. Harrison talks about you sometimes.
Because it's really my insecurity. I've never made a movie with a female lead, so I Princess Leia, but then I put her in a bikini. So,
So I think I lost some points there.
Yeah, I did for a minute and then I lost it.
Oh, but I did make Queen Amidala in those movies. Yeah. Well, you told her not to wear underwear. Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I did do that. And then I had her tummy clawed away for no reason too. There's that.
Oh, well, there was a reason, but I don't want to talk about it.
No narrative reason. Although, narrative reason isn't something people normally associate with my work, so. I can tell you this. It was a great green screen that she was standing open-tummied in front of. It was a great green screen. Sorry, open tummy. Not only does it sound
open
like
tummy, that
like,
sounds disemboweled.
Well, yeah, it sounds like very innocent, like, oh, my tummy, tummy. And it does sound like open tummy, like she's standing there with a gaping wound, like she's been attacked by a bear. Like, okay.
I just made a Bob Dylan sound.
Natalie, action. Guys, I need to take a break. That bear really got me.
Oh, help me. Help. Bob Dylan really got me.
George wanted my tummy open. So. Looks good, Natalie. Looks good. All right. We should end this. All right, everyone. Well, if you made it this, I don't know. I was going to say, if you made it this far, bye.
Bye, everybody.
I'd like to say, I feel like we're perfecting the cold close. Everyone. everyone knows about the cold open. You know, just the kind of walking start, you know?
So most people, they want to grab the audience at the front.
Yeah.
We want to grab them at the end. Yeah.
You're trying to leave. Come here.
Hold on. I got something for you.
Didn't you forget something? Forget your keys? Yeah. They're all the way in this room.
Oh, no. Jingle.
Ooh. You just toss
them down the hallway.
Turn off the lights. Or just
go find them.
You toss them and you bolt cut like a giant cable. The lights go out. Trick or treat.
Now try to leave.
You can't.
Of course, it backfires a little bit because people don't stay long enough to get to that part.
You go into the room and you're like, okay, I haven't found... Honey, did you find the keys? Well, the lights are out and this room seems to be a ball pit full of cigarettes. Bob?
Are you here? I've been here since 1974.
You found my cigarette room. Good luck finding those keys in there. The bottom layer are spent cigarettes, ashes and filters, and some spit.
At the very bottom is a whole lot of other keys.
At the very bottom is some good music that no one's ever going to find either. Right next to your keys, there's some good music right next to them. Never to be seen. And some human bones of the last people's keys I threw in heels.
I'm not going to say that I do a great Bob Dylan impression, but I will say that yours sounds way more plantation-y.
I have made him kind of like he might have owned slaves.
And I don't think he ever did. I don't want to start that rumor.
All right. That's it.
He does have that. Never mind.